met a wildly successful person, and I'm talking clearly not a person who's earned millions, but billions. If you met somebody like that, what kind of questions would you ask them? I mean, it is hard to believe, isn't it? So somebody like, say, Steve Jobs, who put a business together with his mate in a carport or a garage, has now grown the most profitable country in all of history. That's hard to believe, isn't it? That somebody could do that. Bill Gates, hard to believe. If you were in front of them, what would you ask them? What secrets would they give you? Well, I want to say this morning that the person who wrote this psalm was a wildly successful person and has a secret to give us this morning, or at least one, maybe more. David went from being a shepherd boy to, by the time he is at the end of his life, he is a king of an emerging power. And by the time of Solomon, if you know your kind of ancient Near East history, by the time of Solomon, Israel is the power. It's one of the mightiest regional powers of that time. David goes from looking after sheep to that kind of person. And when he pens this song, he's at the end of his life. And he has some words to say to the people who are listening to the song. In 2 Samuel 22, it says this about this psalm. David sang to the Lord the words of this song, which is now recorded as Psalm 18, when the Lord delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. So David, when he's writing this psalm, he remembers all the challenges that he had through his life, and he remembers all the victories, and he wants to share the secret of his success. Now, for those of us who know David's story, the majority of his life was not successful, was it? He spent, from the time that he was a young teenager, he was anointed to be king, picked out by God, anointed by Samuel, and then he has this great moment, which every Sunday school person knows about, because you probably hear it for 7 years in a row. It's called Daniel in the Lion's Den. That's the other story you hear. David and Goliath. He has this amazing moment where God uses him and little rocks to kill a mighty warrior. But he was 30 before he became king. And for a lot of his life, he was on the run from the king of the time, King Saul. He was in the wilderness. He was hiding in caves. He was at death's door. In fact, he says in 1 Samuel 20, when he's speaking to Saul, he says, there is hardly a step between me and death. David feels like in this period of his life that he is just a whisker away from dying. And in that place, he calls upon God. So if you look with me, and you'll need to do this morning, this is one of those times when you actually will need a Bible in front of you. So if you can pull one out, do so, because the psalm is too big for you to have remembered all of those words. So I want you to look at it with me as we look at what was David's normal when we see it in verse 4 to 6. His normal, the way that he remembers his life, is he says, the cords of death entangled me. The torrents of destruction overwhelmed me. The cords of the grave coiled around me. The snares of death confronted me. In other words, David went through a lot of his life feeling he was in desperate trouble, that he was nearly about to die. And in that place, David, it says, in my distress, I called to the Lord. I cried to my God for help. If you want to know the secret for David's success, you could go home right at this point. That when David was at his weakest, he called upon God to be his strength. There you go. That is the secret to David's success. When he was at his weakest, he looked to God for strength. That's probably not what anyone else will tell you if they were said, oh, this is how I became successful. They don't normally say, actually, I was a failure. I was losing. And then everything turned around. And that what you need to do, everybody, is go away and be a failure and lose as well. But this is what David wants you to know, is that at his weakest, God was his strength. And he tells us why he calls upon God, the bit that we didn't read a lot of from verse 7 to 15. If you scan your eyes down there, is you'll see that God is fearsomely great. He's scary. Smoke rises from his nostrils. It's kind of like an image of a dragon here. He parts the heavens and comes down. Clouds are under his feet. You may or may not resonate with the imagery in verse 7 to 15, but in youth ministry, in the youth group on Friday nights, we looked at God creating the universe. I mean, the more you know about our universe, the more unbelievable it is that God made it. Like the fearsome, incredible power of this God. We're a few years on from David, but I don't know if we're that further on in terms of our awe and respect of this immense God. And David says, when I'm in desperate trouble, why wouldn't I call upon this incredible God that made everything, that has all of this power? And as we're going to find out, that is for me. So God, David knows that God is so big, and he calls upon God to rescue him. And in verse 28 and 29, we see two ways that God rescues him. Verse 28, "You, Lord, keep my lamp burning. My God turns my darkness into light." In other words, when David calls upon God, what God does is he does something in him where everything that was so dark is now light. In other words, he gives him a different mindset, changes his mind about what's happening to him. You know Psalm 22? Bruce would know Psalm 22. He'd recite it straight off the top of his head. My God, why have you forsaken me? Is Psalm 22. It's familiar words for those of us who know what Jesus said on the cross. But David wrote this psalm. And if you read the psalm, for 19 verses, David is in desperate, terrible trouble. He wonders why God's forsaken him. He wonders why God is so far from saving him. He cries in anguish, and there, it seems, is no sound, no answer. But by the time you get to verse 19, this is what David says. "But you, Lord, do not be far from me. You are my strength. Come quickly to me." The song shifts from being overwhelmingly dark to suddenly God gives David a new perspective, so that from verse 19 to the end is David goes, "I've got you. That's enough for me. You are my strength, my refuge, my help." See what God did in the midst of that song is David starts off in darkness, and God helps him firstly by doing something in his mind. He changes the way he sees his circumstance, and he sees it's got light in it now. And that's what David says God does for him. That throughout his life, this is not just Psalm 22. This is the majority of Psalms that David has written. The majority of Psalms that David starts off in trouble, in darkness, and ends with praise. That's the majority of Psalms. And David, at the end of his life, says, "You know what? God heard my prayer by firstly turning my darkness into light, changing my mind and seeing it in a new way." The second thing that God does for David in verse 29 is he gives him courage, and he gives him energy, and he enables him for a fight. Verse 29, "With your help, I can advance against a troop. With my God, I can scale a wall." So, remember with me, David's in trouble. He feels like his enemies have got the upper hand. He feels like that death is snaking its way around his neck and he's about to die. And when he seeks God for help, God does something in him so that he says, you know what, now I can advance against a troop and I can scale a wall. That as he looks back on his life, that whenever he called upon God, that what God did something in him that gave him courage, that gave him energy, that gave him expertise, so that he could do what he didn't believe he could do before he called out to God. From verse 29 down, David goes on to describe what I'm going to call his divine boot camp. He basically says things like this. So God, in verse 32, you strengthen my arms. Later on, he says in verse 33, you make my feet like the feet of a deer. You train my hands for battle. Now my arms can bend a bow of bronze. You are my shield. Your right hand sustains me. You put a broad path before me. In other words, David says that when you are in my life, God, these skills that I had before that I didn't believe were enough, my ability to fight, my ability to bend the bow, my ability to run in the midst of battle with sure feet is lifted up to a level that I couldn't believe. And that because of this, I win. For those of you who know the story of David throughout 2 Samuel, you know that he's noted for being a mighty warrior. Against great odds. Against great odds. A great commander, a mighty warrior, against great odds. And what David believes is that the reason why he can be that mighty warrior, that great commander, is not because he's cleverer than most or more skilled than most, but because he knows the God who gives him that capacity. That when he calls upon God, God enables him for the fight. That's why David, as a small young teenager, can take rocks and kill a warrior that no other warrior in Israel believes they can kill. He's taken ordinary things and with his extraordinary God knocked the head off a great giant. That's why David can outwit every time Saul with the whole army of Israel at the time. That's why David defeats the Philistines. That's why David turns enemies back. Because he knows that God can take his small skill and make it great. David is no self-made man, is he? He's got insight into the place that God has in all of his capacities. Every event, every opportunity David believes that has been successful is because God is in his life. He honors God at every point throughout this psalm. You're never hearing that David says, I am clever, I am smart, I am better. David never says that. He says, God at every turn is the one that gives me greatness. You know what? As I think about us, our church, and the area we're in, I think the sin that is, if any sin we are guilty of, it's a sin of being self-made. The sin of thinking that our success has come at our hand. In our church, we have what might be classified as successful people. But let's not confuse your success with your capacity and your opportunity and the place that God has had in it. Daniel Kahneman, who wrote a book called Thinking Fast and Slow, not a Christian guy, he says that success is, the recipe for success is this: success equals hard work plus skills plus luck. Most of us forget to honor the luck component. You happen to be born at the right time, with the right family, with the right access, in the right country, with the right money, in the right area, with the right friends. Wow, you are so clever, aren't you? Daniel Kahneman goes on to say that great success, the recipe for great success, is hard work plus skills plus great luck. That's a non-Christian guy saying that very few of us have had much input to our great success. David has a name for the bit that Kahneman would say is luck. He says, actually, the recipe for success is hard work plus skills plus God. If you don't have God, then you don't have anything as far as David's concerned. You don't have anything to win the battle, to be victorious, to be successful. And so he wants to encourage that, those of us who are paying attention, to let God prepare us and equip us for success, for all those struggles that we face. David talks about he's facing a physical battle. He's got swords and bows and arrows and enemy that are actually out to kill him. Well, hopefully that's not your life. But we can take away what David says and apply it to our lives, because so many of us face different kinds of challenges, mental, emotional, spiritual. Paul, when he talks about achieving success, if you like, in our lives spiritually, he doesn't say that just go out and try your hardest and give it your best shot. He acknowledges that God has a strong place in anything good being done. So he says, for instance, about his preaching in 1 Corinthians 2, my message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on God's power. He tells Timothy, he says, Timothy, I want you to study the Scriptures. Why? So that you may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. This is a strange thing. As you go to God and as you put your life in the Scriptures, it seems that Paul says that that will help you be successful for every good work that you find your hand to do. Go to God, let God make you more than you can be by yourself, and God will do great things through you. You know, at times we're call out to God. God, please rescue me. I'm in trouble. I wonder what you're expecting from God when you pray that prayer. How is God going to answer that prayer when you're in trouble? Sometimes it's with an unexpected miracle. You financially, I mean, I can clearly remember this for me. Financially, no, you got nothing. And you walk to the post box and you find there's a $1,000 check in the post box. It's not what you're expecting. And there it is. Not all of us get that moment, but I've had that moment in my life. But when we're in trouble and we call out to God and we say, God, please help me, what are we expecting? Because what David says we, hands up here, what David says we ought to expect are these two things. That God will change your mind and God will give you the capacity to use your hands to make a difference. Change your mind and the capacity to use your hands to make a difference. As he surveys his whole life, there's no question that David had moments of miracles. There are amazing miracles. But as he surveys his whole life, he says, in the main, the way that God works when he brings victories into our life is he helps me turn my mind from darkness to light, and he empowers me and enables me to use my hands to win the battle. Does that sound a little bit too ordinary for you? This was the crow's problem yesterday, wasn't it? They had a mindset problem about, I reckon, about halfway through the game. I think they thought Richmond were going to win. They played like it. They played as if they were afraid. And I think Richmond thought that Richmond was going to win. There was a mindset problem. And if the Crows were to have any chance, they needed to change their mind. That they needed to think they were going to win and Richmond were going to lose. The second thing is that I noticed yesterday, I didn't watch a lot of the game, but I watched enough to draw my own conclusions and decide was going to go for a bike ride. The second thing I noticed is there were overwhelming Richmond numbers at nearly every turn. that when the ball bounced badly, it never bounced badly for Richmond. No joke. It seemed that the Crows couldn't get a ball out of a pack, and Richmond every time had this magical way of popping that ball out and moving it down the field. In other words, I actually think that they're equally skilled teams. They're amazing teams, both of them. But on the game day, something about Richmond had a little bit of magic. There's a little bit of extra there for them. Sounds pretty ordinary that basically what David is saying is what Richmond and the Crows experienced yesterday. That God, when you call upon him, he will change your mind. He will give you a new mindset that will enable you to win. And the second thing is, God will give you the magic you need to take the ordinary skills that you have and turn the situation around. That's what David says is his recipe for success. Is God can do this. Does that sound a little too down to earth? A little too practical? You know, I find it a little difficult as a pastor convincing people that when I'm meeting with them and they say, God needs to help me here and here and here. And I just go, well, actually, all you need is you need to see this differently and you need to work. You need to work. You need to work with hope. You need to take those skills you have and apply them in the best possible way and trust that God will take it and turn it around. Doesn't that seem a little too practical? That's what David is like after a lifetime of battle and a lifetime of winning. You know, as I think back through my life, there are a few things that I need to acknowledge. A few years ago when another youth pastor and I thought, we want our young people to serve more in the community. So we got, I think at the time it was 16 young people to serve in the community. I never guessed that that thing would grow into something else that we now call Big Week Out. Would take 11 years of my life, grow to 5 different regions, have thousands of young people go through it. I never guessed that. And you know what? We did not know what we were doing. But God took what we had, the little we had, and turned it around so it was bigger than we ever believed. All we wanted to do was help 16 young people serve somebody in the community. And then 12 years later, I'm still going, how do I get rid of this thing? In fact, I tried to kill it 4 years ago. It was taking so much of my time. I completely and utterly let it go. And then some young people rang me up and said, I would like to run it this year. And I said, I can't do that. And I said, no, we will. And they burst forth with new life. When I took on the role of being a state youth guy, we hadn't had anything done in our state for like 10 years. And my mandate was to get every youth group in our state together again. And I thought, well, okay, one thing I'll do is I will run a combined youth event. Some of you here would remember combined youth events when they were at Flinders Street Baptist and how large they were. I don't know what was in me that thought that that was a good idea, but I had nobody. Nobody was on board. So I just went and visited some people and they could see a little of what I could see. And then today we had our largest Easter camp ever. This year. Our largest Easter camp ever. In 2007, there was nothing. We were struggling. How? Not because I'm clever, but because I went and did something, and then somebody else did something, and a whole bunch of us did something, and we decided that we weren't going to see the future as if it were dark, but we're going to see it as light, hopeful, courageous. Did something, and God did something with our did somethings. Made something more than we ever imagined. I come here. I'm a pastor. I don't really know what it's like to be a lead pastor. I think the same recipe applies. Jason, get up every morning, have a new mind. See this in a new way. Don't see it in a dark way, see it in a light way. And get out and do something. Use your hands as best you can and God will do the rest. Don't you think that that's what I should do? That's what you should do. isn't it? That's what you should do. Get up, believe that God is more than you've asked or imagined, and have a go. Now, I want to acknowledge that this is not to say that it all turns around. This is David looking at his life at the end and looking backwards. You know how many times he didn't feel like this? So many times. But David knows that this, that it may not always win in the way that we thought it would, but he's got God. And God plus David is enough. And he ends up at the end of his life singing this song with these words, "I love you, Lord. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold." I want to finish by noticing this. God is not like this to everybody. Are we clear on that? God does not promise to everybody he'll give them the same kind of effort. To the faithful, he says, "I will be faithful." To the blameless, you show yourself blameless. To the pure, you show yourself pure. But to the devious, you show yourself shrewd. You save the humble, but bring low those whose eyes are haughty. God does not promise to help people who ignore him. David knows that he has the confidence to talk to God about rescuing him because in verse 19, because God delights in me. God loves me, David says. That might seem a little rich for those of us who know David's story. David goes on to say, "I'm righteous. My hands are pure. My ways are blameless. I have kept your laws, my Lord." Does that seem a little rich for those of us who remember there was this whole Bathsheba and Uriah thing? Commits adultery with Bathsheba, kills her husband Uriah in the field of battle. Might seem a little rich, the nepotism he shows his sons and the poor leadership he exhibits there. Does that seem rich that David might say, "I'm righteous, I'm blameless"? It does, doesn't it? You see, David knows both sides of the equation here. He knows what it's like to be against God. And he knows that when you're against God, you do not win. And he knows what it's like to be faithful, to be blameless, and to be pure. And he knows that when you're like that, God delights in you. And at the end of life, David says, "I want to choose that way of living. I've learnt my lesson. I've learnt that when I follow God's ways, when I honour God in my thoughts, when I follow in his righteousness, then God delights in me and will rescue me." So, what do you want to do? Which way will you choose? I mean, you can do what David did and go through a lifetime and have your Bathsheba and Uriah moments. Or you could pay attention to David and go, "I want to choose God." This is why David writes the song. Is he wants you to know that when you choose God, it may not go easy, but it always will go well. The outcome will be for your best. God will bring you into blessing. God will rescue. Bold claim made by a guy who lived a lifetime of trusting God. As you look at your life today, what's God calling you to do? Maybe it could be that you need to surrender the self-made thing and start honoring the fact that God has blessed you and that thanksgiving is the best way for you to respond. Maybe it could be that there needs to be that shift in you, the mindset, and get out and trust and work with hope. Finally, if it is you that you are running from God, that you are the devious and you are the haughty, If that is you, you are in trouble, my friend. You are in trouble. You hear me? You're in trouble. I need to tell you that. It will not turn out well for you. Not, maybe not in this life, but certainly in the next. It will not turn out well for you. So turn. Stop your pride. Stop your haughtiness, as it says here. Stop your deviousness and give up. Listen to an old man writing a big song. He wants you to know, give up. Come back to God. I love you, Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer. My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge. My shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I called to the Lord who is worthy of praise, and I've been saved from my enemies. Amen.